there any words?
Feeling relatively spacious is a problem. Be with the tension that always keeps me awake.
Can you hear? Feeling relatively spacious this afternoon, she felt to be with the tension that often keeps her awake, alert, uncomfortable, not resting.
Yeah, always.
The word always, I left out. Sorry.
And it seemed that was possible. It's around this area. And I felt, you know, really, I wasn't pushing anything, the space was just sort of sitting there very small, like at the root of a tree shape. And so quite a few sensations happen. Nothing particular moves, but I felt the connections further in my body. So that's a kind of blessing for me, because I'm so often wanting to get rid of it and I can't even approach it. So far so good, tentative. And then the time came to stop, and I got up, and then immediately as I walked up here, it's like I'm clobbered. There's fear, I can't, tension, no. And then that...
Can you hear?
That kicks off the disempowerment and the sense of powerlessness. So it's, you know, it's really difficult not to get very frustrated. And,
Did you feel the transition?
I felt quite calmly getting up, and you know,
I jumped.
It's like as if I'm not allowed to do that.
Not allowed to do what?
What?
Not allowed to do what?
As if, you know, I can't go investigating.
Oh.
And that's actually when we spoke earlier, so what's underneath the constant mental activity? There's fear and then disempowerment, but it's underneath is this. And it's because I have never. Found where it relaxes into space or lets me drop.
Good. It's good. In the wide picture, it's good. A big step. Can I tell one of the images that we had?
Yes.
Sometimes we talk about this as the mafioso that doesn't allow her nor to relax, nor to ask why not relax. And if any small movement of like, but then el mafioso sends out the guys. Yeah. And so we talked about different things that are don't get the attention of the mafioso, so to speak. And things that are gradually building as if underground or behind the scenes or inside the walls or whatever, which they are. And it's really lovely to see, first of all, in the few months, January to April, in the picture of years, and then in a couple of weeks. So yeah, it is totally, totally frustrating. And And the word disempowerment. We worked with a bit today. Like, what is the feeling when I think I'm disempowered? And what's the mechanism there? And what's really wanted underneath and after all? And we've also mentioned this terrible daring or terribly daring approach or statement. That is to feel how, because Sophie has so much intelligence and she knows so many techniques and ways, and she's a dancer and a dance teacher and a nonviolent communication and this and that. And she has every tool. She's better than Batman and Batgirl together. And so now, what? And because there's not really any way really to talk about it, and so that it's good that this comes in here, because we're talking, and especially now at the end of Days of Silence, another talk. Oh my God, more words. And so it's like not giving up on the words and the techniques, but knowing their place and that they're kind of eventually useless for oneself. And that you're carrying them now for others later. And then the fact that no technique works just by being a technique, however good, doesn't work by itself. The fact that that is like that keeps, like, it feels like the boat scraping the bottom. In a way it is. In the poem yesterday of VJ. Where only when our thoughts and feelings sink, when the boat of our thoughts and feelings sink, do we realize depth. So it's like scraping the bottom, finding what isn't about disempowered or empowered. And so we've talked over the days about how the friendship between Sophie and me is growing, and that gives some kind of wider context. However tight the knot is, it just holds a space that feels how good she is and how many, how everything is ready in a way. But there's now no more room for any tricks, which is great in a way, and it totally sucks in another way. Because it's really hard to just scrape the bottom and not take it as something wrong or and not to take our one-line story as the whole story. Which is then our one-line story is all around dancing around the mafioso. Is this a common word, mafioso? The head of the mafia, yeah? Okay. Or someone, whatever. I'm thinking of the head. Or it could be a middle head, which would be probably even worse. Looking for a quotation to give someone, I came across several other amazing quotations from the same book by Eddie Hillesum, who was a Dutch woman in the wrong time, so to say. And her diaries became a book called An Interrupted Life. And I have a few pieces of that here that's why I was late, I was like copying them from the computer. Scribbling them down. Partly because she's so bright and so gifted and honest in a way that many people, even in one's own diary, wouldn't be that honest. And so she's really talking about these amazing experiences, both difficult and wonderful. And so for example, in 1941, she was there in Amsterdam, and she had an interaction with is it Gestapo or Gestapo? Gestapo. A young guy. Let's just say a young guy in uniform anywhere in the world. We don't have to locate even in time and space. A young guy in a uniform who somehow was nasty to her. She would have had the yellow star here. And somehow, because of the support she'd received from friends and a therapist who was also her lover later, and her own inner resources and her writing, somehow she didn't take it. It didn't come in as disempowerment, though it was that kind of situation. And she found herself looking into his eyes, and she almost said, I didn't have time to copy that one down, but more or less, she almost said, you know, like, did you have an unhappy childhood, or was your girlfriend not kind to you this morning, or? And she could really feel for him and feel how dangerous he was also. And then she ends that piece saying, but it's actually the system that uses those people that is at fault. And so our discovery is of what isn't that kind of system. So even when that kind of system is in place, and it is in place in our bodies and our minds, there's the mafioso, and there's the fear, and there's the not allowing, and there's feeling disempowered, and there seems to be no way out. So on the 23rd of August, a Saturday night, she has this really wonderful, ordinary experience, which I'll read later, maybe. Just on the train coming home, and it's night falling, and people, it's all crowded, and she feels love of life and people, and then she's walking home, and it's good. And then just a couple days later, so normally we would only hear that side of the story, like if she would have become a teacher, what would be recorded in the text would be that high and not this low, where she happened to take on, as she said, I really took on a heavy burden when I read all those letters from his girlfriend. And she finds herself huddled in the corner, pressing herself against two walls, like as small as she can get. Pressing, like trying to have some. And she said her heart frozen, unable to melt. Waiting for something to give, to start flowing inside me. And she talks about it as something that wasn't only one time, but something that she does. So that wouldn't be put into the Eddie Hillesum Sutra on loving life or whatever. And so just feeling the importance of hearing what's the one line story, and then letting that help us feel what's the whole picture in a lot of different ways. So at first it's like starting to recognize that there's a one-line story going on, and it feels like hell, and it feels like no way out. And then when we see ourselves in that as well, further hell, our own torment of ourselves. And so this week I've been having this image or metaphor of the circulation coming back. And so I want to repeat it again because it's really important. The circulation comes back in when we're in good surroundings. And when it comes back in, sometimes it's good, like she has the nice day, like the nice night. And sometimes we would rather die, actually. It's good to speak of that wish that comes sometimes. There is a kind of death wish sometimes. And so even though it's the system getting what's needed, being loved, being seen, being somebody, this is one that's interesting, especially with all these teachings about selflessness and being nobody special and this kind of thing. Which is very freeing at the right, appropriate unfolding, opening that gift at that time. But when, let's say, for example, I don't think it's purely a psychological effect, but we can at least partly understand it that way. Let's say if, as a child, when the somebody-ness was growing naturally and developing, it was not allowed to, and we learned we can belong by not being somebody, we can stay if we're not somebody, if there's not attention, if there's not appreciation. And so then when we grow up and we're out of that and we fly that nest, and at some point inevitably, that's what's got to come, is the being somebody and feeling appreciation. And we have all these good spiritual texts to quote about how that's wrong, and we shouldn't go there. And also, we personally would rather die then. So just to know that that's very normal. Because when it happens, it can be so intense that it feels extremely abnormal. But if we remember, it probably is very, very simple. It's just like what's needed is starting to be able to come in. And it's terrifying because we've always needed it, but it wasn't always allowed. And we seem to have made some kind of deal that I'm allowed to live if I don't fulfill this, if this need is not fulfilled, if the circulation is cut off here, then I can survive. And so to let the circulation is to reverse that devil's deal. But we can't always confront that mafioso directly. Most often not. Occasionally, yes. Occasionally, we can command. That will be a fun day. We can say no. But most often, there's a lot that has to go on unseen. And in that particular example, it's great, sorry for interrupting, that it's not that they didn't want to. They were just so unprepared. They had no practice at seeing ships. They had practiced, luckily, or whatever, so well seeing water, watching water, that they could have a clue. But it sometimes could be a bit feel blaming of ourselves if we say, ah, you just didn't want to see that all these years. So,
yeah. There is an interesting dynamic between that and something else that has come up here in the last 10 days, actually more in the first retreat, where at least a couple of people were pointing to some vague, undefinable aches and pains in the body. And part of the advice that you gave was don't feed it by thinking about it. And I totally agree, because I think also some of the latest research on body-mind connection shows that in cases like that, when we actually put energy into that kind of situation, like thinking about it, by labeling it, it actually gives it a certain solidity, which actually brings it into manifestation.
Yeah.
The thing is, if we take that too far, at what point does that shift and turn into a case of, hey, there's a huge Spanish ship in front of me, and total denial?
Yeah. So I want to edit the way you heard my words. I didn't say exactly that, I don't think, or I didn't mean to. I said, be really noticing what the thinking is and how that affects the feel, the sensation. So hopefully that's a little bit more incisive. Yeah. There's a really, really funny YouTube video you have to find. Just like go on YouTube and Google nail in the head. Has anyone seen it? It's so funny. It's a conversation between two young adults, a man and a woman, in a living room, Western style. And the woman is talking about she gets headaches and et cetera. She has all these difficulties and pains and problems that she doesn't know why, and the man is really trying his best just to listen and not to jump in like men's, like those men's do, with an answer right away. And he's like, "But," she's like, "Mm?" Like they've had that conversation before, like, "Mm? Just listen, just give space, don't give a solution." And she goes on and on, and finally the camera comes around and she's talking to him. She's got this huge nail sticking out. So with any kind of pain, whether it's the like direct live mafioso or whether it's a pain in the body that could be caused by some physical accident, or it could be something releasing, or it could be that I just need to change my posture, or it could be I need to walk, or there could be a way of addressing it. There could be just the need to let the heaviness of the thinking fall away, etc. To stay with it, to go away from it. And so it is important to leave room for questions about pain of all kind. Orit talks about, she was very disturbed when a student came to her and said that the student had been with another teacher and had mentioned having back pain after doing forward bends. And the teacher had said, "Oh, but imagine how much back pain you would have had if you'd never done any forward bends." And Dorit was like really angry. That is kind of an irresponsible answer. To not actually, well, what is this individual body? How is it actually with the forward bend? And how is she doing the forward bend, or he, and so on. So not to go for, I think that that one line story is somehow or other an easy way, an easy answer, even if it's like hell. It's easy because it comes most easily. We're most used to it. I love that old traditional Zen story. I think it might be a real story, otherwise it's a teaching story, where I think there were three guys, probably in robes, and there was a flag and there was wind. For us, here we are, we're not all guys and we're not in robes and we have trees and wind. And there was a comment about how the flag is moved by the wind. And then the second one, the more clever, said, oh, it's not the flag moving, it's the wind moving. And then the most clever was, well, it's not the flag or the wind, it's your mind. Which is true. But, well, in a way, it's all true. The flag is moving. And that's the only way we know that there's wind. The wind is what's moving. But if there's not the movement of the mind, that's also staying with the story of the flag was like that, and now it's like this, and now it's like that, and now it's like that. To say that there's a movement of a flag in the wind. And so what's freeing gradually and suddenly and in all kinds of small and big ways is especially noticing when we can, the movements of the mind. The movement of the mind especially to feel small in some way, to feel disempowered in some way. So it's not that the mind is wrong for that movement to happen. That's part of the thinking that comes is that, oh no, Jaya said we have to be careful about this feeling small thing. And now I'm feeling small. I'm even more kicked out. That's part of the feeling small. That's another movement of mind to consider, like, what's that? And really simply to feel that when there's the movement of small, small asks for big. It might ask for big kicking and screaming and saying, leave me alone, big. I'm busy being small. Or I'm so small, you don't mean me. You can't be addressing me, I'm too small to address, or whatever. But in the bigger picture, when they're small, small asks for or needs or loves big. And from big, we can still feel small. It's not a rejection of small. So this is where your investigation comes in, Kailash. From big, we can feel small. From small, we can't feel big. That's the nature of small. And the difficulty is when we're feeling small. So that means I feel not good enough, I feel wrong, I feel out. What else? I feel disempowered. Not enough. Any more?
Contracted.
Contracted, yes.
Can't do it.
Can't do it. And I have to. But I can't. So maybe the original small would be that I have to do it. And then I tried and tried and tried from have to, which was impossible from the beginning. And then I find that I can't. Which confirms somehow that I had to, but I can't. Any other small version of small? From today or this week or every day? I've been using the word poverty, but this week, poor, so I can't is a version of poor. But the original poverty is that I have to. So even if that in that contracted thing, it feels like the worst thing to be seen. Like that's the last, we want to go into our room alone, like Eddie's in her corner pressing against the wall. She's wanting contact, but with a wall and with herself. So feeling contracted, small, poor, disempowered, can't, have to, not enough, unlovable, and all the other words that could fit there. If we know, if we keep it simple, and we know that when we're in there, we feel not fit for company, and also any company would be overwhelming, and or it would be overwhelming, or I don't deserve it, or whatever. I can't handle it, and they wouldn't give it to me, and all of that. And how ashamed I am, especially after doing two retreats at Sattal, to find myself in a ball against the wall. And sometimes like Eddie, having brought it on, reading the letters of his girlfriend, for example. Whoever he is. The fear that as small, it seems that the only possibility that if anyone would see me, they would see me as being as small as I see me. Whereas when we know how it feels from big, with or without small, there's love and there's even contentment, there's understanding, there's tenderness, there's response, there's stillness, there's no problem. We can do this. Whatever it is, even though we don't know what it is. And we don't know how or why. So the small is the mafioso deal. And so sometimes it needs to be really, I often do this gesture talking with Sophie and others, like we're in small, and if we would make any movement against that, like you're small, too obviously there would be such a reaction, like who are you to think that you're not small, etc. Mm-hmm. With or without words, just cramp. But just slowly feeling that even so, I detect with my sensitivity that that's not all. Even though it's all, there's some other, completely other kind of feeling, a completely other way of feeling. So if it would be like if our receptors are trained, let's say all the cells have receptors trained to feel the verbal linear story that seems to be continuous with its ups and downs. But as if the cellular walls somehow start to feel the warmth of something else or the spaciousness of something else. And we can almost not recognize that that truly is something else, partly because it isn't a thing. It's such a different dimension or a way, the big from the small, but it is. And to practice feeling that discreetly without calling attention of the mafioso. And it starts to be that we end up passing through the wall and we're out of the room. Sometimes. And gradually that room, we found out, was an illusion. Though it wasn't. The suffering was real. And there can be room for this question of who would I be without small? What's that? So, are there any questions or answers or?
Just in a way, I'm relating to what you're saying. Interpretive for me, there's also a real safety in small because.
Exactly. Yes. Yeah, and they can criticize you when you're in there, but it feels safe. So it's good to notice that it isn't real safety, but it feels that if we would be big. And it's true also that so the being somebody phenomenon, or the and having been trained to be nobody in the psychologically unhealthy way. And then coming into being somebody who is here, and creativity does come through, and it is worthy of appreciation, and appreciation comes sometimes, and then, oh! And there is that phenomenon of when we look up to, and it's related to the disempowered thing. So when from not enough I look up to, then I will have to look down on. I have to. Because something in me knows I shouldn't be down looking up. And luckily, sometimes we can find a way of getting out of that dynamic without like bashing everybody that we ever were inspired by. But sometimes it does kind of crash around a bit. But since people probably can criticize anything and everything, and mostly they're just in their own small, and eventually they're in their own room, and it's mostly all about them during that time of small. And so part of the big is finding that it isn't all about me. And so then the criticism can be taken as, oh, actually, I can understand. So like with the Gestapo officer, she knew it wasn't about her. And so there was a truly different response. That who knows, in that moment, could have saved her life. If she had responded in some way, it could have been, he's free to do it, free, compelled, or whatever, to be violent to her. Well, I think we could hear Eddie's experience now with that. So. But there was some movement? No? So it's partly big and small together. I love this one statement that my dad and his wife have on their by their kitchen sink, that the only normal people you know are the ones you don't know well. So on the 23rd of August in 1941, on a Saturday night, Eddie Hillesum writes, on Thursday night in the train from, is it Arnhem? Arnhem? Back here, everything was fine. And I like also that there's the way that big sounds big compared to small, but big is this ordinariness as well, that you're settling into the human situation. Everything was fine. It wasn't like, everything was fine. Outside, night was falling, silent, all-embracing, and majestic. And inside, the cramped compartment was full of workers, noisy and lively. I sat withdrawn in my dark corner, my right eye looking at the peaceful scenery, and my left eye at the expressive heads and graphic gestures, so, of my fellow passengers. Yes, I loved it all, life and people. And then the long walk from Amstel Station through the near pitch darkness of the all but enchanted town. How's the English? It was dark, it was nearly dark, nearly completely dark, and there was a feeling of a bit of magic. Quite suddenly, I had the impression that I wasn't alone, that there were two of us. I felt as if I consisted of two people who were squashed tightly together and felt so good and warm as a result. Isn't that so cute? I was in such close touch with myself, full of inner warmth, and felt utterly self-sufficient. So we hear these words and we'll think, oh, but I'm not. Or that feels like a goal to reach. But just staying with the cozy, the ordinary feeling. And she's meaning like complete, not in that small, not enough thing. Enoughness, she means. And then I had the long, friendly chat with myself and walked happily down all the little Amstel side streets, completely immersed in myself. And I discovered with no small satisfaction that I got on very well with myself. And the next day, the feeling was still there. So can we hear that and the flavor of it, and also be aware of how that's a particular story that could land in a way that we could take as a measurement, or a should, or a why don't I, or it was a happening, and those were the particular circumstances of the happening. And so when we receive teachings of any kind, formal, informal, verbal, nonverbal, being aware of, let's say, the recording, how we take it in what mood we were when we took it in, how it came to us. And also literally recording. So nowadays there's so many literally recordings of teachings. And I've already mentioned how there's some troubling nature to that, because it's so easy to edit. And then our wish to manage the meditation. Well, I'm taking half an hour to meditate, so I shouldn't be listening to snoring, kind of thing. It goes unquestioned, that direction in the meditation. We stay as consumer, and we're trying to get a good deal, the best for our precious time. So, for example, when I was with one of my teachers, Punjaji, at first it was so simple in the living room on little cushions on the floor and absolutely normal and human. And then suddenly sort of gorgeous, unexpected, specific to the person. And then the next second, finishing the letter, which would have been a little blue. If you've been in India long enough, the little blue thin aerograms that we used to use when we didn't have email. And I remember just trying to get as, would just write so small to get as many words on as I could. It's just a paper that folds up into itself and then you would glue it with that gross glue at the post office and send it. Another lifetime. And then it got bigger, and then came the video camera. And it isn't that that didn't make a difference in the room. Imagine if there were a video camera in here. It would make a difference in the room. And it would also mean we would have to have lights on now, for example. We wouldn't have this natural light, which is beautiful and soft, and it makes a difference. And then I was very much pro that we should record the whole thing from beginning to end. But videotapes had to be brought from the United States to fit that camera, and we didn't have that much tapes. We didn't know who was coming to bring more. So only got recorded when the teacher started speaking. So now if you would watch satsangs of this teacher, you would think there was no silence involved, when sometimes that was almost all there was, or like at least half of the time. beginning. In between, they were cutting out even the in-between silence between interactions and at the end. So then we might watch the satsang, it might have an impact, but the impression that's come through is quite different from what it was, what was happening. And so even more easy to take against us. Less, a little bit less living quality. As Vijayaji said yesterday, already putting his feeling into the Urdu, he said it loses energy, and then to translate to another language, so. And then when the person is gone and the people get to go and do what they will with what remains, it's a bit like grave robbers sometimes. Not necessarily, of course, on purpose at all, like with good intentions and a lot of willingness to work hard and bring the teachings to others and so on. Good intentions. But if we could know that oftentimes we're missing way more than half of what was the happening at the time, both in the techniques that come and in the teachings, the verbal teachings that come. So with the techniques, for example, Orit Sen Gupta talks about a lot of the poses that in yoga, in the yoga postures, the physical yoga, if they weren't about finding a comfortable way of being still and happy, then she feels they probably came from the ecstatic dances in the temples. And so there would have been a happening where someone's body discovered a powerful position. And then that was discovered as, this may be useful generally. Let's work with that together. Teamwork, finding, how is that for you? How is that for you? How is that for you? What if we do like this? What if we do like that? And then coming out of great kindness, it's such a huge generosity in India that we have all of this that's being passed down over thousands of years, that this position seems to have these effects on the energy, which means it might be beneficial for that person and not beneficial for that person. It's a neutral medicine that needs to be taken by someone who needs that medicine. And it needs not to be taken by someone who needs not that medicine. And then to receive that form, to feel our way back to when it was, how it is a happening, or how it was a happening, and how it is a happening. So it's kind of taking into account the energy lost in the recordings, but especially the energy lost in the way we take it in, how the movement of the mind is as we take it in. And when there's a possibility of knowing more about someone's life, not only what they said, but how they lived, or being around people who are inspiring, that, to get more of a whole picture. So like with Ramana Maharshi, he is known now, like people say, the Maharshi technique, and my whole system goes, okay, I know what you mean, calm down, to myself. No, not really. My understanding is that through mostly Westerners coming and taking from what was recorded, which wasn't everything that happened, there's been promoted the technique to ask, who am I? And that's associated with this teacher, Ramana Maharshi, who is the teacher of my teacher, Punyaji. And so that can be good, can be a great technique, and that's way before Ramana Maharshi. That's one of the things that was a happening that people checked out and found it could be generally useful as a technique. But Ramana's own experience was that he was dying. And he wanted to know what doesn't die. He was 16, and he lay down to die. And it came to him, it was a happening. What doesn't die? This is death. What is gonna not die here? And then he didn't die, but he came away with some energy. But then he went somewhere that he just had to go. He didn't know why, didn't know how he got there, and meditated for 20 plus years. In complete neglect of his body. And that's noteworthy, that it's possible to be still, absorbed with ants biting your body or whatever. That's noteworthy. But it's also kind of gossip-worthy, like it's exciting. And it's so far, it partly is exciting because it's so far away from what we know is actually possible for us. And so we remember that. And then we're not really sure what to do with other information, like the fact that he, later on, after these decades of meditation in caves and so on, temples and caves, in what seems to have been a practice of love, loving Arunachala, the mountain, a form of Shiva. So it seems to have been a devotional practice, in fact, from what he says about it. It's hard to know. That when it came that he came out of that solitude time and came to be more open to, for people to come around, first a few people and a lot of monkeys, and he knew every monkey. He knew their personality and he knew their dynamics. That's also kind of exciting, noteworthy, gossip, a little bit gossip-worthy. Not as exciting as like the flesh sticking to the stone floor of the temple. But if we really take into account the person and the ongoing happening that was there, that he was open and whether interested or receptive to be aware of the social groups of more than one group of monkey. And to talk to them. There was some communication, I don't know if we can say interest, I don't know. But receptivity and awareness and influence very widely, very social. And so the image of the guy in the sort of diaper who hardly spoke, but whenever he spoke said, who am I? Or it just isn't like that. And he was very, he was very aware with food. So we think of him as being, he was way up there in his eyes, you know, it's like vastness there, clearly. And the same eyes would notice if someone left one piece of rice, one grain of rice on their plate and didn't eat it, one grain. And he would not only notice, he would say, what is that? That doesn't compute in our sort of one-line story that would be useful for feeling small against. And also the movement of like to try to put him down because he was picky or like that's kind of like also boring. So just feeling for the whole picture when we notice there's a one line, feeling for what's missing in the story because it certainly is there. So if someone is like the poster boy for vastness, and the three words, who am I? Then feel that two-dimensional quality. Take the preciousness of that question, who am I? That's good. And the preciousness of the vastness some people can feel looking at even photos of him. And the care and the carefulness and the precision in detail. That he may not have, maybe he didn't say much about it, maybe he just went over and was like, But it wouldn't have gotten recorded. It wasn't like a devotional song. It didn't fit in the category of what should be recorded. But it's actually really equally important. So what teachers say and do, what they said and what they did and didn't. And how things that we would compare ourselves against were actually happenings. That they happened to happen on the train and then in the streets and of a particular night or on a particular night in a particular dress. But feeling our way for the whole picture. When someone says, don't practice, feeling for where they practiced for 30 years, from 2 a.m. until 8 a.m. every day. And take the preciousness of don't practice. What would that be? Sometimes that's one of the meditation instructions. We come in and I say, okay, don't meditate. Good. Now meditate. Good. Now don't meditate. It's kind of like shaking out the, what's the one line story that's happening in the way we're meditating? Get the whole picture. Yeah. Don't throw the cloth away. It just needs a little sunshine. Any comments or questions? Or
do you think it can be an attachment to a technique?
Of course. It can be attachment to everything. When we're in the small contracted, as if, and when it feels like that's all there is, or when that's the background motivation, which is what it usually, almost always is. So I have to, and I therefore eventually I can't. Or I can, I must, and eventually we can't. Because from have to, we can't. From can, we can't. Then the way that we accept the technique into our lives is from small, and it always reminds us of small. And even then, it can be helpful, and it can help us grow, that we can start to feel big and small together, and then maybe the technique, it's time for it to fall down, or maybe we can go, oh, that's what they've been saying for 10 years that I never heard them say. They said, relax. Or they said, just the out-breath, not your whole attention, or whatever. And not to, we're accustomed to, if there would be a discovery like that, to be ashamed and humiliated that I didn't notice before. And if we can feel the unburdening, the lightening feeling of that discovery, rather than wrongness that I didn't get it right the first time. Or when there is the feeling of wrongness that I didn't get it right the first time, or now I'm such and such years old and still I haven't. To feel, okay, that's one version of the story, and therefore there's another version of the story. So sometimes the technique was useful to get rid of itself. And by the way, we used it. And sometimes the technique really fits, and of course there's some motivation from lack. I want to be better, that's why I'm doing this, even though I'm pretending that it's not for that, etc., because I know I'm not supposed to, and blah, blah, blah. But when the technique fits, even if there is that so-called pushy motivation, all about me motivation, poverty motivation, then still the technique can still bring about another situation where the technique can land deeper and we can get closer to the happening of it, the lively quality. And it fits better. And even with an appropriate technique, it comes to an end at some point. And there's that feeling, like you mentioned, like time, that I don't need my stick anymore. And who am I without my stick? Exactly that. You needed the stick. You did, and that was good. And then you didn't, and that was good. Thank you for listening.